Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. The legislative season's about to begin in Missouri, and this is a session with a difference. The Republican tsunami in statewide races, coupled with GOP legislative supermajorities, mean it's a much different governance landscape than it's been. With me to discuss what it means are Joe Manis, St. Louis Public Radio political reporter. Professor Terry Jones is the Founders Professor of Political Science and Public Policy Administration at the University of Missouri-St. Louis. Marshall Griffin is St. Louis Public Radio's Statehouse correspondent, and he joins us by phone. Thank you all for being with us, and Happy New Year to you all.
Yeah,
Happy New Year to you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, let's get started. Marshall, I'll start with you. In very real and practical terms, what does this GOP dominance of the at the legislative session and in the Capitol mean for the session?
Well, for starters, it means that they're going to get a lot of things accomplished that in a little bit quicker time, and they won't have to rely on veto session to get a lot of their major issues passed, which has been kind of the norm for the past 4 years under the second term of Governor Nixon. You know, he's vetoed a lot of the top their top priorities, which a good number of them they've been able to get in September. I don't think that's going to be the case this time around. I think the Governor-elect Greitens, for the most part, is on the same page with the House and Senate Republican leaders, and vice versa as well. We might see some eventual differences, some fracturing on some things, but the one thing that I called the new normal in my headline I did earlier this week, and that is there will not be a reliance or the reliance or the need to come back in September to get something major done.
All righty. Joe, it sounds to me like the Democrats don't even have to show up.
Well, they will only – well, okay. on the surface, that looks like the case. But I think on a few things there will be some differences, although not early on. I mean, as we said a million times, right to work's going to pass, and it's going to pass quickly because Greitens has promised to sign it, and it's a point of agreement between all camps. I mean, that's the law that would curb union rights in the workplace. But Greitens is pushing for some ethics reform that is stricter than what legislators have proposed in the past. It's never really gone anywhere. He's one of the interesting things he's done is that he's had these little, they're like photo ops. I mean, like with the working out with the highway patrol, showing up to have lunch with some of the state workers. He's doing this thank you tour. But there's a point to it. I mean, the idea is to kind of show that he's reaching out to people to try to forge some relations. I think also to bolster his standing. So because he doesn't know that much about state government, so that when he does have differences with the General Assembly, I think he's hoping that maybe some of this goodwill that he's built up will help him push them in some directions. I'm intrigued about that. Not in the first few weeks you won't see that, but that's something that could play out later.
Terry, do we really know what Eric Greitens' priorities are?
No one... Marshall talked about being on the same page. We haven't seen very many pages in Eric Greitens' playbook. Certainly right to work, yes, but not too many more. An ethics reformer would be the exceptions to that. What he means when he says he wants better education, how he proposes to go about that, we don't know. What he means when he says he wants more jobs and in terms of the role the state plays, subsidies and the like, in making that happen, we don't know that. So there's a lot to be learned about Eric Greitens in terms of what his agenda is going to be. The Republican legislators have been assuming that their agenda is going to be his agenda, but I'm not so sure that's going to play out that way on many issues.
Is there a little of Donald Trump here? I mean, the same kind of thing we're about the president-elect. He's talked a lot about a lot of things, but hasn't given any detail.
But a millennial version.
to be fair, they had one of his top aides did a conference call a few days ago, and I was on it, and he did talk about, aside from ethics and, of course, right to work, is that they want to try to get some more police protections, like a blue alert, things like that. He wants to show – he's a former Navy SEAL. He wants to show that he has law enforcement's back. At his press conference yesterday, he had law enforcement there as he laid out his new law enforcement team. I think that's going to be a theme at least early on because he wants to make sure that that's strength. Now, that could play out in the right to work debate or in the companion thing, quote, paycheck protection, because there are these very strong police associations, a.k.a. unions. And so if he's trying to forge good relationships with police, that could be a point where he, the General Assembly, and the police officers' associations, in the, especially in the urban areas, there could be some tension there. And I'm curious to see how that plays out.
One of the things that has to happen in any legislative session, have to pass a budget. And on their deals, on things that the state is majorly, has a major involvement, social services, Medicare, K through 12 education, higher education, corrections, we don't know what the Greitens budget is going to look like.
Well, I'm not sure if he's sure yet. That's why he's not making it part of his State of the State address. He's going to wait until early February. Now, he does want to have some sort of savings accounts for education. But again, if it's for K through 12, he has to be careful whether or not it runs counter to the state's very strict constitutional bans against any public money going to private institutions. So he might need to go to the public, I mean, for a vote on something.
And Marshall is going to have to figure out exactly what kind of money he's working with there, because that's very unclear. Revenues are down. We do know that.
Yes, and he has said that shortly after he takes office, he's going to make some cuts to the current budget. In fact, the same day, there's, I believe, a series of executive orders that he's expected to sign sometime shortly after the inauguration ceremony.
This, I assume, given the composition of the legislature, is going to be a very business-friendly session. Marshall?
I would say so. Now, like I said, there may be some fractures and differences that appear on a few issues here and there that could be related to the business community. But lawmakers they're excited. They're excited to have somebody that they believe will be on the same page with them when it comes to the economy. Now, I will say this though, I'm predicting that there will be some conflict. It might be minor, but I'm thinking there will be at least some conflict over the role of tax credits, because there's still a difference among Republicans as far as what the role of tax credits should be. And yeah, I don't think that's going to get solved this session, or maybe not even next session. But I do think that might be one area of contention that could pop up during after the honeymoon is over.
Well, because especially historic tax credits, which is one of the largest expenditures as far as state tax credits, they're very important in the urban areas. And since Greitens is from St. Louis, I'm sure he's already been hearing from Mayor Slay and others about the importance of historic tax credits. Some of the rural areas aren't as friendly toward it, although some of the smaller towns have started using them. But that's one of the things where Greitens, like Nixon, like his predecessor Matt Blunt, Nixon and Blunt both tried to curb in the state tax credit programs on some issues, and they weren't very successful. But Greitens is already staking some ground by making it clear that he's not going to support any tax credits for a soccer stadium.
Terry, let me backtrack for just a moment and get back to right to work for a second. Can you explain for our audience why there has been this perennial Republican drive to pass right to work? What is about that that's so appealing to them?
It's more symbolic than real, because in states that are right to work states, unions that have still continued to exist, membership is still by and large continue to pay dues now, even though that they're no longer are compulsory. But you usually have 80% to 90% of them still paying their dues.
It varies in the state.
On states where you went from non-right to work to right to work, if they've been always right to work, you're right. The numbers are different. It has more to do with the image than the reality. The evidence about whether or not being right to work or not right to work helps or hurts a state economy is extraordinarily mixed. And so it's not much to be learned there.
Joe? Yeah, I think there have been some dramatic differences between the states. Nevada, for example, which is a right-to-work state, has hugely powerful unions, especially those connected to the culinary industry and other Vegas-related professions,
like hotels. Sure, sure.
They have become huge political force, and that's one of the reasons Democrats did decently in November in Nevada. Now, one of the reasons the unions did that was, even though they're right to work, is that they have very big training programs for workers. They've made themselves sort of indispensable for the employers. And so they've kind of forged this a relationship, which I think in some ways is stronger than what you've seen in Missouri. So there have been some who have been encouraging labor leaders to look towards Nevada to try to kind of model that, as opposed to Indiana or Michigan, where I think when they became right to work, and I know from personally, I'm from Indiana, I have relatives who are labor people. In Indiana, it has weakened the labor movement. And in some ways, this is political because there's Republicans have never liked unions, in part because on the political side, they tend to donate to Democrats. So there's this political angle, just like corporations often tend to donate to Republicans. So you've got this tense. And then Republicans also believe that this will reduce corporate costs in the state. Now, some say it won't reduce wages. Others say it does. The studies are mixed. But I think there's going to be a lot of pushback on this, but it's going to happen. It's going to happen quick.
Terry Jones, you and I always talk about this when we have these sessions here, and that is the urban-rural divide. The fact that we have a governor now that is from the urban area, is that likely to have any impact at all on this divide?
He's blurred to some extent his urbanism, just as Bob Holden did, just as Jay Nixon mm-hmm. did, in terms of trying to say, I'm from all Missouri, not a particular side of it. He's also spent part of his adult career in Columbia, in mid-Missouri, and indeed his wife is a faculty member at the University of Missouri, Columbia. So he did not campaign as an urbanist. He does not portray himself as an urbanist or somebody with a city-friendly agenda.
So it's probably
indeed, his first message to the city of St. Louis was, get lost about that soccer stadium thing.
Indeed.
But there had been reports, rumors, and the staff doesn't deny it, that you know he had been wanting to move a lot of the inaugural ceremonies to Columbia, to you know big arena or someplace there because it would be warm and bigger. And that got, I'm told, I heard a rather earthy conversation allegedly between his staff and some legislative leaders when that was floated. So there's these little things, but that's nothing major. But he did get rid of the inaugural parade, so that may or may not
be. You're really affected by this. The other day when we did a program together, it just happened. You just heard that phone call message. And
well, because I think it's symbolic. Yeah. I mean, I really do. I'm not saying it's good or bad, but I'm just saying it's symbolic when you kill off something that's been around for 100 years.
Particularly when
I can
very
tell you that business owners, local business owners here in Jefferson City are probably not very happy about that decision. And the local high school bands that would have marched in the parade, probably disappointed by that.
And symbolism is important when you don't know a whole lot about where, in this particular case, the governor-elect is coming from on some issues.
Yeah, but to be fair, this is why I think he's done some of the things that he's done, where, you know, working out with the Highway Patrol and having this to kind of reach out in other ways. And I think in that way, it reminds you a little bit of how Joe Teasdale reached out. And who was a Democratic governor back in the 70s. So it's going to be interesting in the next few months, especially to see how all this shakes out.
Sure. We have to take a break. We'll do that now. We're taking a look at what is and may be ahead for the Missouri legislative session, which begins tomorrow. My guests in studio are Joe Manis, from whom you just heard, also Terry Jones, political scientist from the University of Missouri, St. Louis, Marshall Griffin, our statehouse guy, is joining us by phone from Jefferson City. Back in just a moment, this is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our conversation with Joe Manis, Marshall Griffin, and Terry Jones. Marshall, let me come back to you. It's already been mentioned that ethics is going to be a big discussion point amongst the legislature during this session. I don't mean to come out of left field on this, but I think we're all aware of what happened in Washington overnight with the Republicans basically gutting the ethics oversight group in the House. Is this likely to have any kind of an impact at all?
Although locally? Today...
Yeah, they just reversed
themselves. They reversed themselves today.
See, I've been cloistered in this studio here and didn't know. Well, is any of that going to have any influence, you think, on ethics discussions here, Marshall?
It'll have an influence on the talking points by the Democratic minorities in both the House and the Senate. They'll sound, I'm sure that they will sound some warnings and express concerns that what nearly happened in D.C. Could somehow, some way happen here as well. The Missouri Ethics Commission, separate and independent from the legislature, they're basically don't have any type of investigative authority. Now, there's been proposals. Some of the ethics reform bills that have not gone anywhere have proposed giving, you know, some type of investigative authority or oversight to the commission. And I believe that may be one of the bills, that provision might be one of the bills this year. I don't know what type of a chance it would have, making it out at least this year. But perhaps what happened in D.C. might spark some discussion that maybe that's something that could or should be done here, is to provide some investigative authority to the commission.
Sure. I think it's more likely to be a cautionary tale. I mean, the uproar, you know, the 12 hours of uproar over what the House Republicans did at night, secret votes. So we have no idea how Missouri's six Republican House members voted on this, unless they say. I think this is the kind of thing that actually Greitens, who is very keen to this type of thing, I could see where, you know, this would at least be talking among Republicans saying, let's not make a misstep like they did in Washington.
Any thoughts, Terry?
Well, consider the plight of the poor Missouri state legislator. You're term limited, so at max you're going to get 16 years of experience. And so you can't keep your day job, and it doesn't pay all that much to begin with. So now you have the opportunity to translate that experience into something that's very lucrative, a six-figure salary as a lobbyist either for a corporation or an association or a group of those. Nobody's going to want to shy away from that. And so you're going to get some talk in favor of ethics reform in the Missouri General Assembly. But they're not going to – they'll listen to the governor, but they're not going to follow in his footsteps on this issue.
I wonder if anything else that's been going on in Washington as the new administration prepares to move in is going to influence us here. I'm thinking particularly of the education secretary nominee, Mrs. DeVos, I guess is
DeVos,
the way it's pronounced. And, you know, her feelings on vouchers and that sort of thing, if that's likely to have impact here.
School choice, I think, is going to be a major issue. If you're going to do something about education, which the governor-elect said he would do on the campaign trail, and if you don't want to spend more money, then you change the way the system works. And the biggest proposals to change the way the system works is to inject more choice, such as statewide charter schools.
Hmm. Yeah, because if they're trying to put money in private parochial schools, as I mentioned before, they're going to have to get a vote of the people. But he will have some early vacancies to fill on the state Board of Education very early. Mm. And because there's some people who are on there who have just been, I mean, their terms have expired, but they've stayed on. So he's going to have several to fill there. Also on the Board of Curators for the same reason. So Greitens could have a bigger impact than people think on education just from doing that, you know, putting on like-minded people who then will try to at least advance some of his proposals and maybe talk up some of this stuff.
But that's a one-step removed kind of control. The governor does not run the Department of Elementary and Secondary
right.
Education. He appoints the Board of Education, people who will hire a commissioner who do that, and the legislature is involved in approving the appointments to the board.
Education, Marshall, will be a big topic this session, will it not?
It will. In fact, one issue that was big 2 years ago and 3 years ago but was ignored last year was the trying to fix the student transfer law. And the reason it didn't really go anywhere last year is because of the two vetoes in 2014 and 2015 by Governor Nixon. And with Greitens about to become governor, there's a lot of lawmakers, both Democrat and Republican, actually, who want to revive the student transfer fix. And that might actually have a better chance of including vouchers this time around with a more voucher-friendly governor and having that supermajority in place in both chambers.
What might that transfer legislation look like?
Good question. At this point, nothing's been officially filed. Just several pre-filed bills at this point, but I would think that some form of voucher provision or voucher language would be in the final product. It's like I say, still too early to tell, but I would be surprised if there wasn't some type of provision for state tax dollars going to private schools, whether they're parochial or non-parochial.
But see, that's where, I mean, when Nixon vetoed it, he was emphasizing the constitutional issue. So I think if they try doing that, they're going to run into court fights. So they'll probably try to do something with charter schools, but those have had kind of a mixed record lately.
And another mechanism is supporting, through tax cuts and tax deductions, contributions to a school foundation so that you can, in effect, have a back door for public dollars to go to some types of private education.
What about higher education, Terry? That's your bailiwick. The relationship between the legislature and the universities has not been the best.
Not been the best, although some of the adversaries in that process are no longer in the legislature, particularly Senator Schaefer. So I don't see any major changes in the terms of the relationship between state government and the University of Missouri. Historically, the legislature has kept its hands off in terms of day-to-day operations. I think it's going to give the new president of the University of Missouri, and then within the next 6 to 12 months, the new chancellor of the University of Missouri, Columbia, time to do their thing and not interfere too much.
But as I was mentioning before, there's several curators that he can fill. Yeah. And Greitens, I would suspect, will likely talk to Republican legislative leaders on suggestions. While technically it has to be, there's a formula, certain number of Democrats, certain number of Republicans. Often the party in power puts kind of nominal people of the other party on, so they're really, really Republicans in this case. But I think he can put a stamp on that pretty quickly, and perhaps, and so will the state Senate. So I think there could be an effort to try to ease some of the tensions that have been underway for the last couple of years. And that may be one, and especially since Greitens' wife teaches there. Mm-hmm. So he has some familiarity with this, at least from observing it. He's not totally unaware of what's been going on.
Marshall, what about the so-called hot-button issues that come up every year? And I'm thinking of abortion. I'm thinking of gay rights. And has the legislature done all it's likely to do with regard to guns and gun control or lack thereof?
Good. That's a good question. You think there would be no more things to gain after 2016 and after after Senate Bill 656 took effect just a few days ago?
The concealed weapon, right?
Yes, yeah. The concealed weapon, the stand your ground. Yes.
Yeah.
And but you don't know. You know there. One of the things I've been doing during the show here is looking at one particular category of bills in the House webpage, and that is federal and state relations, which you can expect. I'm thinking there might be even more of an aggressive push against Washington now that there's about to be a Republican in the White House who shares a lot of the same views, or at least appears to share some of the same views as the Republican majorities in the House and the Senate. For example, there's Mike Moon. I'm sure you've all heard of Mike Moon, one of the more socially conservative House members. He's proposed one bill that would prohibit the enforcement of any federal regulation by any state department or agency unless enforcement is approved by the Missouri General Assembly. And that would seem to try to push back against any further gun control efforts that might come out of Washington. At this point, though, I'm not sure what those would be, and unless Trump turns into a gun control advocate, but I don't see that happening. But that federal pushback is going to continue, it looks like, based on a few of the bills filed pre-filed here.
Although they have to be careful a bit. In fact, there was something similar that was proposed a few years ago by Brian Nieves, a state senator at the time. And the bottom line was the law enforcement community was saying that this was going to cut off their federal money that they got for different things. So people were backing off. So Moon often puts some bills out there. Sometimes it's just for discussion.
Pretty much.
Yeah, and I think there had been some promise during the Republican gubernatorial primary about pressing for open carry on college campuses, campus carry. I'm not sure where Greitens comes down on that. There has been some talk that he actually may be a bit more security conscious than he's a former Navy SEAL than some Republicans, so he may have a different take on some of this. That's going to be an intriguing question, how he looks at some of these issues surrounding guns.
Thoughts, Terry? No, other than he's not going to create any friends at the legislature or he if they try to take conceal and carry to college campuses. Even in the most conservative of states, that's been opposed by faculty and students and staff on the campuses themselves.
Now, back to the LGBT or gay rights issues and abortion. Certainly, there's going to be some discussion of that, Marshall.
I believe there will be, although the very controversial bill that was brought up in the Senate by Bob Onder, which would basically allow any business owner to to opt out of providing their wares or their services to same-sex weddings, that bill, at least Onder has announced his intentions. He will not bring that bill up this year. Now, that doesn't mean someone else might as well. As far as extending discrimination protections to the LGBT community, I'm sure there's a bill that would do that, but I haven't seen one pre-filed yet, and I think that its chances would probably be even less likely this year than in recent years.
Yeah, because that was one of the issues that did separate Greitens from the other Republican candidates for governor, is that he had been very clear that he was against some of the proposed bills that would have curbed or barred rights for the LGBT community. That was the one distinction. And so I think legislators may be aware of that.
And we're going to possibly have some interesting tension between the Attorney General, who's made a good part of his career on religious liberty issues, and the governor-elect, who seems to come from a somewhat different place on those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, Josh Hawley, like the governor, has not held public office before. But, I mean, he's a former clerk to the U.S. Supreme Court, so obviously he knows the law very well. But he's going to, I think, try to take the Attorney General's office in a different direction and focus more on differences with Washington. In some ways, reminds me a little bit of the Bill Webster years back in the 80s. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. And like what you said, whether or not he and Greitens are on the same page on some of this stuff.
And abortion, Marshall?
I'm sure there will be some abortion bills that come up. I haven't seen any in particular yet, but you can count on there being some type of further abortion restriction. But actually, probably the more the direction it might go in is further scrutiny of Planned Parenthood and laws that would basically make it harder for Planned Parenthood to operate.
Well, and there's a court case now because Planned Parenthood's actually trying to put some abortion clinics back in some of the operations that it has around the state, I mean, where there either used to be clinics or they think there should be. And so I think it could be a bit more combative. And there had been talk that there was going to be at least one bill that was going to ban abortion entirely, I mean, just to try a test case. And but so far, there hasn't been much talk about that. And it's unclear whether that's one of Greitens' priorities. I mean, he has made clear that he, opposes abortion, but whether or not it's one of his top priorities or if it's one of his other issues, so far he hasn't really talked that much about it.
The Attorney General, though, has much discretion, and Attorney General-elect Hawley has made his reputation on appellate jurisdiction disputes, so he's going to naturally gravitate towards those, and he's been socially conservative in those regards.
I have to wrap this up. Let me go to each one of you and ask what specifically you're going to be most interested in looking at during the course of this next couple of months in Jefferson City. Joe, we'll start with you.
Well, I know this is kind of in the weeds a bit, but people forget that a photo ID requirement was approved in November. Well, Greitens can fill these election boards in St. Louis, Kansas City, and St. Louis County, Jackson County, pretty quickly. And I'm curious to see who he picks, what sort of approach he takes towards that. There was an implementation bill that's now in the wings, but the state is required to spend some money under that bill in order for this to go into effect. But I think that's something that could affect elections down the road. It intrigued me that he put Rick Stream, the former state rep, in effect in charge mm-hmm. of elections in St. Louis County. Mm-hmm. Stream has a pretty respected reputation. So that's the kind of thing that may not be get a lot of headlines, but could really affect things in the next few years.
Terry Jones?
What are Governor-elect Greitens' priorities rather than his rhetoric? We'll know the best read on that when we see his proposed budget.
Whenever that's going to. Do we know when he's going to do that? Is it? Has he set a date for when he's actually going to do it?
No, he's because, as I said, he's not going to do the State of the State, which is normal.
Right.
He's doing a State of the State address, but he's not going to talk about the budget,
right.
which is 90% of it. So he's going to do it in February is what he's talking about.
All right. Marshall, you can wrap it up. What specifically will you be paying a lot of attention to?
Well, something that hasn't been talked about at all yet, but the deadline for real ID to take effect in Missouri and nationwide is next January. So I think one issue that's going to come up and get talked about is making Missouri's driver's licenses, allowing the Department of Revenue to issue real ID compliant driver's licenses and whether or not there'll be any pushback against that.
Yeah, because the real ID would be required to use your driver's license to get on a plane, things like that.
Yeah, Missouri is not in compliance, obviously, with that. Okay, we'll have to leave it there, folks. Thank you once again for being with us, Joe Manis. Thank you. Terry Jones, thank you. And Marshall Griffin, thank you. I hope your cold gets better, Marshall.
Thank you.
And again, once again, Happy New Year to you all.
Thank you.
It's going to be an interesting one. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.